Welcome to the Wide World of Punting, episode 2 of the second season. I'm Jacob Wynn from the Tripod. Really hope you guys enjoyed episode 1, which was a 75-minute Q&A with the CEO of Top Sport answering your questions. As I mentioned last week, this summer I'm doing less episodes, but they are going to be a bit longer, and today's episode is a little bit longer and an in-depth chat that I think you're going to find really interesting. Apart from the Wide World Bet of the Week, which I'm going to throw in right at the very end, this whole episode is an in-depth interview I've been really looking forward to bringing to you guys, which is with Mark Porter, who runs Punt Hub. For those who don't know, Punt Hub is the largest Facebook punting group in Australia. They've got nearly 100,000 members. And we had an awesome conversation from one group admin to another. Mark has a really interesting background, and our chat in this episode is kind of talking about his journey, lots of stories along the way, as well as what it's like to run a massive group, the obstacles he's faced, and the daily challenges and decisions and tasks that are involved. And it might help people who are in any big groups kind of understand a few aspects or realize things they never knew about how big groups work and why things might be the way they are. I know a lot of people are also going to be interested in the business aspect, like how does a big page or a big group make money, and the whole world of affiliate marketing, which we definitely dive into. And in saying that, there are heaps of references in this chat to how things used to be in terms of affiliate marketing. So big incentives for punters, bonus bets are talked about, massive offers. And those are all really relevant to a lot of Mark's stories throughout his journey, because he worked for a bookie before he began Punt Hub, and he also had his own affiliate marketing business, as well as, you know, still relevant to this day running a group. So please understand, anytime either of us are referring to anything like that, we're talking about things that no longer currently exist. But I think it's still, and you know, those things don't exist now for good reasons, but it's still really fascinating and quite crazy to discuss the landscape and the industry and how it has changed in just a few years, as well as what the practical effects have been. I also want to just quickly touch on the editing. I have to apologize. Like, I've spent heaps of time clipping this all together, putting this episode together. There will be several times where it does feel like the conversation jumps. And the fact is, we talked for over 3 hours. There's several tangents. There can be interruptions. You know, we went into really great detail on some, you know, points which might be more preliminary. So I've really tried to streamline it and cut it all together to improve the structure for you guys and to make the episode as quality as I can. So as I said, over 3 hours of chat, I've actually condensed it into two parts that are about an hour each. So part one is tonight. Part two is going to be next week's chat. We covered that much stuff. And I've just tried to put together the most interesting and most informative parts of the conversation. You might think an hour is a really long episode, and it's probably the longest pods I've ever made, but you'd be surprised how quickly it fills up too when you're creating content. So hopefully it's still quality. I just wanted to touch on that, because I'm never deliberately cutting the guest off. I'm never deliberately cutting info out or trying to cut anybody's responses out of context. I'm just trying to condense it in, make an interview as great as it can be. And it is a really great chat. It begins with Mark talking about when he had just come out of uni. He studied in an economics background. He's a young guy working at a pub, looking for a career, which is interesting symmetry, because to this day, Mark, while he runs Punt Hub, also works at a pub. But he gets into all of that. So this chat begins with him talking about looking for his first job in the industry, which ended up being with a professional betting syndicate. And we go from there. Here's my chat with Mark Porter. I hope you enjoy.
Because I liked punting, and I was like, I like the idea of markets and things that are like dynamic stuff. Like I liked the excitement of numbers jumping around and trying to sort of do that. So I was looking for jobs for traders, or like, and there was heaps of jobs for traders, and I just was young and pretty, I was just like, yep, send off an email, resume. You just send them all out and just see what comes back. And I was far from a good uni student. And like, I didn't really have anything impressive on my resume at all. Probably still don't really, but you know, you just see what comes back. And some of the high-end places are like, sorry, we're only accepting, you know, high honor students and people in like these like gifted programs and shit. So I was like, see ya. But this, a couple wrote back and said, yeah, do you want to come in for an interview? And oh, do you know much about horse races? I said, I fucking love it. I said, I watch the races every Saturday. Talked with horse racing about my friends. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I've picked up what I have just from sort of trial and error. I've lost plenty of money in sort of doing that. But yeah, I love it. It's like a problem that like we can send people to the moon, but you can't definitively tell me who's going to win a horse race. Like we can't, you know, accurately, we can think we can, but like there's obviously a margin of error and everything, but you can't tell me who's going to win a horse race. And it's, I always say it's like golf, right? Why do people get obsessed with golf? It's because you can't fucking beat the game. You can never score it. Like there's no such thing as a hole in one on every course. Like even if you play one of those little chip and putt courses, you're not going to get a hole in one every course because there's a, you know, it's just, there's so many variables that change day to day.
So it's like something that can never be solved. You're exactly. always striving and to get just, better, but you never solve it.
Yeah. And you're like, you get a little bit better and you go, and you, everyone's had those days where you have a fill up and you go, fuck, I think I'm pretty good at this. I've cracked this. You know, you get on these stupid sort of like little tangents where you picture yourself being a professional punter living in the Bahamas on a yacht. It doesn't work like that, you know. You get brought back down to earth pretty quick. And I think that's part of why it's so appealing to a lot of people, because it's just something that can't be solved. Big believer that like punting is still a form of entertainment. Like it's demonized and like, yeah, if you do anything badly, like if you do anything to the extreme, it's shit house. If you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, it's not going to be good for you. If you drink a case of beer, fuck, I'd love one too. Yeah, cheers. If you drink a case of beer a day, it's not going to be good for you. You know what I mean? If you bet all your paycheck in a day, it's not going to be good for it. You know, like anything, there's, if it stops becoming fun, do something else. For any of your audience that don't know what like a quant model is, it's effectively just getting all of these bits of data and creating a model that will say, based on all of these bits and pieces that you've given me, the likeliest outcome is this. So it sounds a bit tech and it's a bit intimidating, and some of it is very, very hard work. Like it's really sort of elite mathematics and probabilities and perms and comms and all that stuff. So so effectively, if we paid a bunch of guys to sort of really scrutinize every video replay, and then we've got another bunch of guys that they compile that data, they send it to the quant guys. The quant guys sit there and work out and tinker with it until they've got a model that fits it best. They send that model, they send the odds on a horse race to the guys that are doing the trading. Now, I know with the place that I worked, they were kept totally separate. Like we didn't even know where they were worked. We didn't know any names of the people. It was totally separate. So all I would do was come in, I'd sit down, open up my screens. You'd get a feed from somewhere else, which you didn't know where, and you would trade around that. And they just kind of taught you how to do that. So the market's not dumb anyway. So the market's, it's not like they would come up with a horse race and have something they would say, think like this thing should be $6, but you can get $30 on Betfair. Like it's never that, well, in my experience, everyone's different. It was never that far out. So the margins were skinny, you know, and they don't, and they often take 7 or 8 positions in a race. So they'll back 3 things, lay 4 things, and they're just sort of like, you know, they're just hoping to come out in front with the results. We were pretty much providing liquidity to the Betfair market. So like you would go maybe 2 hours in advance. So if it's, what's the time now? 6:45. So I'd go to the races starting at 8:45 PM and you would have your model would already be in there. So it might have runner one, you know, out the true odds, or they think the odds should be $4. So you'd put some money to lay it way under, and you'd put some money in the market to back it way above. So if someone came in and moved it, you would get hit and you'd back it at a big price, or you'd lay it at a low price, at a really low price. So that's what I meant by like we would populate those tiles. We were populating those tiles with the money. A lot of that money that you saw was from this one business. And it was like they would train you to not make it look obvious. So it's not like you wouldn't do the same number. You wouldn't do like 500, 500, 500. You just hit the keyboard and do 561 or 567, just random amounts. You know what I mean? You'd try to make it just, you'd hit like, you'd know that it'd want to be, you'd want to put $200 and something there. You just hit 293. And so it didn't look like it was all really sort of robotic. It looked like it was sort of, there was a human element to it. But there were other syndicates around the world that do exactly like do this stuff. So it's like you're sort of almost competing.
That's a hell of an introduction to the industry. Yeah. But like, but you were only in one part of the team where you were being fed, like, we're working off the fact that this horse is a 25% chance to win or a $4 true odds. But you weren't necessarily privy to why the guys made it a $4 shot. So that's why you're saying, like, you don't come out of that knowing how to beat the system or anything like that, because obviously you don't know what's gone into their model. But so what was the next step then when you left that job?
So after that, effectively I said, look, because I used to look after some big punters down at the pub, and I said to them, look, guys, I'm out of here. Like, I'm leaving in a month. I've given my month's notice. You know, I won't be able to look after you so much anymore. But, and when I say look after them, we just give them, like, they were putting a big amount through the tab. Some of them would come and get on the piss and play the pokies and stuff. Like, so they were customers that the pub wanted. So I would comp them, you know, steaks, meals, beers, whatever. Like, you would look after them. That's what I meant. And then one of them was just like, mate, I've got a job for you. There's a new bookie, a big mob that's in Sydney. That's they've been around, but they're some new owners have bought this bookmaker, and we want you to come and run the Sydney office. And I was like, fuck, okay. It was like, you know, the Wolf of, I don't know if you've seen the Wolf of Wall Street, where they're all in the call center, and it's just like feral. It was just like mayhem. That.
Yeah,
it was like that. It was this call center, and like no one was in like business attire. It was like guys were in singlets. There were like girls were in like not bikinis, but you know, it was like, because it was around summertime, I think, from memory, or maybe it was like spring. But it was like just guys were had headsets on and were like throwing the like an American football to his mate at the other end. There was probably 25 people in the room. And I was, and here I am like a nerd with a suit and a tie and like, and I walked in, I was like, what the hell? And like the whole place, it was like a record scratch and everyone stopped and like looked and I was like, hey guys. And it was just effectively that it was a call center. Like that's all it was. And so I got promoted to like, I think my title was like VIP BDM, meaning I've got to try to find and look after like VIPs, which let's not beat around the bush. They're, you're not a VIP if you're a winning customer, right? Or if you're sharp. You're not a VIP. So I'm looking after, and people say, oh, you know, what constitutes a VIP? And some people say, oh, I turn over heaps. Got nothing to do with your turnover. It's how much money you put into their business. Now, what happened was I had a bunch of guys I knew, and there was a one bloke that I got on with him really well, and he was pretty rough, worth a fortune. And he was betting, he was a losing punter, but he was doing it sustainably. So the amounts that he was losing would probably make some of our eyes water. But for him, it's nothing. If you've got assets and a business valued at sort of like a couple of $100 million, it's not even a drop in the sort of the ocean sort of thing for them. He was a funny bloke. He rang me and just said, Marky, some fucking flea at Ladbrokes has got me number. Well, you can now cross Ladbrokes off the list of who it was. It wasn't them. But he said, some flea at Ladbrokes has got me number, and they've offered me 50 grand for a 50 grand deposit. But you've been good to me, and I like you, and I like having our chats every Tuesday and stuff. So you match it, and I'll stick with you. And I was like, mate, like, I'm not going to piss in your pocket. And, like, it's my job to keep you betting here. But, like, you're not an idiot, and I'm not going to pretend you're an idiot. Mate, I flat out can't match that offer because – and I explained to him. I said, new bookies are trying to dangle a carrot, right? They want you to take a big bite out of that carrot. And then once they've got you betting there, then it's easier for them. So that's cost per acquisition. So they want to get you with a big first offer. Once that's happened, the offers get less and less. Do you know what I mean? And it's more of a maintenance sort of thing, like a retention strategy than an acquisition. So I just said, mate, take the offer from Ladbrokes. I said, mate, there's a good bookie as any other ones. They'll take a bet from you. Like, might have changed now. I don't know what the risk difference is now. It was seemed to be a lot more people betting back then, but I don't know if that's true or not. Like, it seems like you could get bigger amounts on without being sort of limited or sent to a trader or something. So I said, look, there's no reason not to take that offer. I said, look, I'd probably lose my job if I got found out saying that, but like, I'm not going to piss in your pocket and say, no, no, just fuck them off. Stick with me and only, and I'll only give you half of that. Like, that's, he knows that that's not good. You don't have to be a scientist to see that that's not good value. So I was like, take the offer. If you win, if that's your betting for the next month, if you win, rip it out of them and come back to me, and I might be able to do something because you haven't bet with us for a month, right? He said, fuck, thanks, mate. You're a legend. He's a funny bastard. He said, I appreciate it. Anyhow, and that's kind of when the penny dropped for me. But I was like, man, why isn't this guy, if he's that wealthy, why doesn't he should just get his PA or a betting, like a PA, to ring, say, like, I've got four horses running on Saturday. These are their names. Like, go and find out what the odds are. Ring these 8-10 bookies. Tell them my boss, who's Mr. X, he wants to have a bet of $20,000 on this horse. What's the best price you can do? If it loses, what can you offer a rebate? Can we get a deposit? Can we get a bonus bet? Do we get an owner's bonus of up to what? So go and find out from all of them and see what that is, and then bring that information back to the customer, to the Mr. X, and say, here's what I found out. It's a bro. And then I was like, that's a business. That could be a business. Someone like these big guys being like a betting PA or a punting personal assistant, right? And I was thinking about like punter's PA or like punting assistant or like, and then I was just like, well, effectively it's like a mortgage broker. It's a betting broker kind of thing. So we started that business. Well, we resigned from where we were. When I say we, there was a few of us because I ran that idea past a couple other guys. And we resigned and we had to do sort of a 3-month non-compete where we couldn't really work places and effectively just went and sort of started the betting brokers. Now, in theory, the idea kind of makes sense. Like you tell someone that works in finance or something, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. In reality, it was very hard. It was pushing shit uphill because you'd go to a bookmaker. We went to Bet Easy or Luxbet or Ladbrokes and said, this is our idea. They'd sort of go, well, effectively, you might bring us some customers, but you also might pull some customers out from us to try to shop them around. And our attitude, we were like, yeah, but that's the marketplace. That's the brokerage. Like, then it's up to you guys to be competitive. We're trying to disrupt and increase competition. So instead of like, you might have to bet this guy 115% instead of 125% or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you guys are going to have to, you know, be more competitive to keep his business. And they were kind of like, yeah, okay. Nah, like they let us set up, but it didn't really make for 18 months. I was back at a different pub. But I was back sort of like pouring beers and I was managing another pub just to make ends meet because I literally had, we were making $100, not even. There was probably four of us at that stage, I think. We're probably making about $75 a week each. So it was like really ordinary. So that's how the betting brokers started.
The biggest challenge with that would to me sounds like the contacts. Like you can contact each bookie and say, what can you do for my people, but where did you get your initial people from? Is that the context you'd made through the past job and through working at the pub?
Yeah, so I knew a couple. Like I knew personally a couple. So that's where you start. And then you're like, look, I can do this, this, and this. And like people are sort of like, oh man, I'm busy. I don't really want to talk about fucking gambling with you. But then comes Friday afternoon or something, they'd give you a call back and they'd go, yeah. And I'd go, listen. We're just starting out. Do you know any big punters that I don't care if they don't have to be, I don't care if they're winners or losers. The bookmaker will work that out. That's not my job to profile these customers. If they like a bet and they want to bet big, come through me and we've got access to all this extra shit that a lot of other people don't. So it was like, but like I said, that was 18 months of nothing, of less than $100 a week. So it was 18 months of us people ringing, and you get heaps of scammers that would, when I say scammers, they're not scammers, but like someone would ring up and go, oh, hey, my dad wants to, my dad's a massive punter. He wants to use your service. And I'd go, okay, what's to get him to call us. that say, no, 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 like, I'll just do it all for him. And I'd be like, mate, no, I don't think it's going to work. Like, we need to speak to the potential account holder. We can't do. They'll say, no, 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 it's going to be in my name, but it's like my dad. And I was just like, mate, no. Like, just weird shit. Or like, oh, look, yeah, my mum's a massive punter. She heard about you. She heard about your service. She wants to deposit $10,000 and get a $10,000 match. Like, and back then you could talk about matches before they signed up and stuff. So,
yeah. So,
you know, we'd just be like, yeah, okay, look, tell your mum to ring us, you know, this kind of thing. So you'd have to try to, whilst we went profiling customers, we were trying to weed out people just trying to rot the system or, you know, wash bonus bets on Betfair or anything that would, like, effectively, we wanted to be a legitimize the business and say, and bookies go, all right, these guys are a source of potential customers. And we wanted the punters to go, right, you know, at least these guys have been around for a while, so they've got a few people on board. So I think it's purchasing power, right? If you go up to and ask for a discount on a bottle of milk, the milk bar might say, nah, mate, it's $3, you know? But if you walk in with 200 people from the town and say, hey guys, we wanna buy all the milk, but they're gonna reduce the price. They're going to make it cheaper for you and better for you. So that's kind of what the idea was. I was like, you know, if we can get a mob of 50 or 60 good punters, and they don't have to be losing punters. They can be this is also before minimum bet laws. So they might be generally sharp on NRL, but just get on the piss on the Saturday and bet on the horses. So again, we're not going to profile the customer. That's up to the bookie. The bookie can put the restrictions and stuff. And that would happen. You get customers to ring us back and go, hey, listen, you guys are meant to be brokers. Like, we've signed up with this mob or you recommended us to go here and they've turned off my trots bets. Like, I can't get on the trots. And I'd be like, look, guys, I mean, we'll have a word to them. But effectively, there's nothing. It's their call. It's their money. And like, we might call the bookmaker, and the bookie would say, mate, the guy's had 5 bets on the trots. He took $16 and they jumped at $6 or something. Like, he's too hard to beat. He's going to beat us. So we're just going to, you know, and we might go back and say, look, you know, they just said you're too good on the trots. Happy to take your belts elsewhere, but trots, they said you can go bet somewhere else because they're not prepared to bet you because either you're getting mail or whatever it is, but it's, you're red hot. And then they might say, oh, you're on the fucking same, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, mate, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, you can't, they've got a book to manage. They've got risk to manage. I understand it would be frustrating, but it is what it is. Until there's laws that prevent them from doing that, you're not just going to have a bookie that just gives away money.
But that is also something that's confronting and a bit of a dirty little secret of the industry that a lot of people don't know when they get into it, is that, like, you can lose as much, like, almost unlimited amount on any given sport or racing, but if you start hitting a certain winning threshold, the bookie's perspective is like, well, we're not in the business of giving out free money, so they can restrict you or cut you 100%. Off. Like, I was like, my mind was blown when the first time when that happened to me. I thought, how can you do this to me? Like, that's not right and stuff. And then you kind of, you try and see it from their point of view. And I suppose you can see, like, yeah, it's just, it's like you're a customer for a business. And if they don't want you, they're not going to have you. But you'd like to think that. And my ultimate thing is, I just think it's important that everyone shares knowledge and information, because if there's transparency and if everyone, you know, at least understands what the deal is, then it's in the bookie's interest to treat customers better, to be more competitive, to take bigger bets, to not, you know, be so fast to limit. Because if it's all unknown and people don't know what they're getting into, the bookies are going to get away with a bit more, I guess, mistreating. 100%. Or, yeah, and 100%. Certainly, like, different people will feel differently about this. Some people will just think it's completely, completely unethical and stuff. But, you know, but it's one of the realities of the industry.
Yeah, and all I can say to that is, like, if they're that, like, go and start, and you can go and jump on Betfair and save up some money and put a bank into Betfair and start laying horses and backing horses and stuff and see, like, it's not easy. And there, and you'll start managing risk and you'll work out how much you can bet, how much you can lay and stuff. Like, they're effectively doing the same. And I understand that the downside is that you can lose unlimited. And the upside is you can only win what they're prepared to lose, right, to you. Right now, should there be, I think there should be minimum, like, there should be minimum bet laws on every price that goes up if they're from a bookmaker.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah, on anything, right? There should be a minimum bet law. So if they want to offer player props, they should not put that bet up until they're happy to lay that bet, that price. And
what they say, like what I've seen is like, well, they say, well, we run a business. It's an entertainment business. It's for recreational. And they use the word recreational, which kind of is synonymous for them, like with a losing punter. So then they say, well, you're winning, so you're not a recreational punter. You know, that's like what they'll say. And certainly when you sign up with someone, you agree to their T's and C's. And at the end of the day, you can't 100%. Argue too much.
Yeah, 100%. That term recreational it's a bit of a cop-out, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, but I read this somewhere. I think wagering is one of the only contracts. It's like a really weird contract, right, between like two parties where both parties like acknowledges, like I shake your hand for the bet, acknowledging that you're wanting to inflict financial damage on me and I'm trying to inflict financial damage on you.
Yeah.
Yet, like that's the agreement. So we're like, right, I hope you lose. And you're like, deal, I hope you lose. I think it's one of the only contracts like that exists kind of like that. So it's a very weird situation. The betting brokers, like, we've got this brokerage thing going on. Look, I can look after them if they want. And we get referred that way. Do you know what I mean? Or like we would own a horse. We'd own 5% of a horse with a trainer. And we'd say to them, do you want us to look after these guys punting? Like we can get owner's bonus. And he'd say, I can send him an email. I mean, back then doesn't seem long ago, but it seems a lifetime ago, if that makes sense. Because you could email someone and go, hey, listen, this is what I can do. We can get this at LuxBet, this at SportsBet, this at Bet365, this at this joint. I can ask, I've got a couple of guys I know that work at William Hill. They might be able to slip you 500 without even a deposit. Like, that's just so illegal now. It seems like it seems weird to think that you could do that. But that was how it worked.
There'll be some people that are so disappointed that they can't get that now. And they just wish they'd be such a shame that they missed out on those days because they would love that sort of treatment. And there will be other people listening right now, like outraged and kind of disgusted at how it used to be as well. And I definitely, even though we both, and I guess you're talking about starting a business and having a lot of people and talking about making money. And I understand that you're talking about making money through affiliates, but we haven't really dived in exactly how that works, but we will later in this chat.
And
people who make it, even we can see like you've got to do it ethically. And like we support, you know, the stricter regulations.
Yeah, it's fine. But I think now they've got sort of algorithms that trigger red flags. You know, if their betting stakes increase rapidly, if they start depositing multiple times, if they're betting on sort of next to, I don't know. I'm just guessing. But, you know, there's more of that protective, those protective sort of aspects of a bookmaker's sort of site now and their service, right?
And a little bit more responsibility or onus on bookies to profile their customers, not just for their own benefit to cut out the profitable ones, but as you say, to check their behavior to make sure it's not problematic. Now, I don't know either. I don't know the exact rules, and you always wonder like how much each bookie would be different too in what they do and how much they really care. But you're right. I think there's a little bit more understanding about that, hopefully, to protect customers as well.
Well, there's,
and, you know, deposit limits and responsible gambling reminders and stuff like that.
You don't know how serious they are about it. If you don't know if their intentions are true or they're satisfying regulators.
Yeah, the way I think about it is, like, it's good to know that hopefully there is some consideration on that side, but I wouldn't trust that wholeheartedly and not try and look after myself either.
Assume
that's, you know, that they're looking out for me. Like, I would definitely employ each person to, you know, and that's what I always say, you know, like take a step back or whatever. And what you said right at the start is like, only punt if you're enjoying it, because like any vice, too much of something can be a real negative on your life. Like me personally, like I really do try any tip I give out ever. I'm really trying to think like if you were backing this long term, it would be profitable. Like that's my filter, my process, right? But some people just expect profit, and that's, you're just not realistic for so many bets. And that's where I think it's important that people see it more as, if you are losing, it's a price of entertainment. So you're paying, because if you watched that race or you watched that game, it wouldn't be as exciting if you didn't have anything on. So that's the idea, is that therefore you get that entertainment, you get that extra excitement, and because it's two footy teams are playing, but they're not your team. But now you have $20 on. Now you care about the result. And whether you win and double your 20 and it's 40, or whether you lose, well, you could have gone and seen a movie and spent $20 and been entertained for 2 hours. So that's the way I think people can look at it. And then I think of it like the tripod. It's like, well, if you're already having 20 on each game to make it more exciting, well, you're still a little bit better off if you're on the right side more often than not. But, you know, that's up to you. But maybe you've got to back some unpopular sides, or in racing, you've got to not back the favorite and stuff. Like if you want to be more profitable, but that's a different argument. It's kind of like, we all know how to lose weight, or we all know how to get a six pack or whatever, but not everyone wants to do it. You know, some of us still love to have our dessert. We don't, not all of us, I know you're going to the gym later, but not all of us want to be like, you know, working out three times a day or whatever. So I think it's cool that the information's out there for people, but not everyone should expect the best results unless you're, you know, you're using the best possible behavior for optimal outcomes.
Yeah. And I also, look, I say this and I happily say it. Like I bet on, I love the NRL and I'm shithouse at betting on them. Flat out crap. Right. But I bet on the NRL because I love it and it's fucking fun. And like I will bet things that I know are super unprofitable, like first try scorer markets or something. You know what I mean? I'm not sure what they're priced up as, like the 160% markets or something, like which is really, really bad pricing. But I don't, like, it's not an investment. I'm putting $50 on the same game multi because I might be going to Homebush to watch them. We try something in Punt Hub, and I've still got to get to the idea of how we started Punt Hub, but we've got a thing that we're trying to do once a month, the Captain Sensible, where we're just like, look, guys, just take a step back. If there's nothing on, like Monday nights are pretty dead, do it on a Monday, right? Maybe at the start of December or the end of November. Sit down and go, right, where did I do most? Write down on a piece of paper, get a pen so you're actually writing it. Don't type it out, and write down which bookies you used. Go to your bank account and see how much you deposited. See if you withdrew, right? And just do deep dive on your own self. It'll take you an hour, and it's kind of interesting and can be pretty fun. I try to just find out where you're leaking some cash.
So Matt, we went on a little bit of a tangent there, but albeit a really important tangent, talking all about, you know, responsible gambling strategies, and truthfully, you know, that could be a whole podcast episode in itself, and I definitely want to go down that road a little bit more in upcoming episodes of Wide World of Punting. But I do think it's really important as well, what, like, some of the advice you've given. I agree with all of that too, and that's why I come at it from, like, if you think of it as entertainment and you think of like anything that you might lose as a cost of entertainment, and if you're breaking even, that's a bonus. If you're having a little extra skin in the game and you're not losing, I just say that. I don't say it to try and lower expectations because I'm someone who shares tips. I say it because I do think maybe people have unrealistic expectations where they think they should be winning. And then it's like you said, you win a little bit, you want to win more, so you bet more. And that's where you get into trouble, and then you have a loss. And the reality is, instead of just facing the loss and say, well, that was the cost of my entertainment, people don't accept that, and because they think they should be winning. So then that's where they're likely to maybe, you know, put more in, and it can be a bit of a slippery slope. So we can put a bow on it if you have any more kind of thoughts on, you know, responsible gambling. And definitely both of us being, you know, admins of big punting groups, we do feel that responsibility to get that message out there.
Yeah. And,
you know, as much as it's awesome when people are winning, it's like, not setting, because there's plenty of other people out there that want you to join their group, and they will promise you the world, and they will tell you that they are in the Bahamas on a yacht chucking their bets on. and you will be too if you follow them. And there's plenty of people, false prophets out there, and we're not that. So feel free to put a bow on that. Otherwise, we'll get back on track as well with the idea to create the Punt Hub group.
So effectively, we had, like I said, we started with this betting brokers idea and it was going okay, but we weren't, I mean, we all had other jobs and a couple of guys actually were like, fuck this, this is too hard. So they left the business and we were sort of sitting around, a couple of us were drinking, having
and this would be about, for context, about 2015 or?
No, a bit later, I reckon.
A bit later, yeah.
I reckon 17. Yep. So 2015. Because remember, we didn't really do any, like the business was shit house until sort of 18 months starting. So, yeah, it would have been 2017. We were like, let's just start a group and just for everyday punters. For guys like us that are just like, someone will say, oh, this horse is running today. Like we didn't really use black books and stuff back then. But like, I mean, they did exist. But, you know, someone saying, sending you a text message, I don't even think WhatsApp existed in those sort of big group chat group things. So we just want to like, when you're down at the pub, because I've worked at pubs, when you're down at the pub, how good is it on a Saturday when someone's like, right, what do you like in this race? And so everyone will be like, there'll be like four different guys that have a different opinion and you're all cheering over something different. You're screaming. One of you wins and buys someone a beer. Like it's kind of that fun, blokey sort of, that kind of feeling, and we were like, what are some like cross things that we can sort of joke about? So then someone was like, well, porno, and we also laughed, and someone was like, boys, fucking Punt Hub. And I was like, that's fucking piss funny. That's a cack. So we kept drinking, we were laughing about all the funny things. You could be like tips of the week, you could have him on the casting couch, you could have all your different like fucking your different type of, instead of like all your different fetishes on the porn sites, you can have like your trots if you've got a trot fetish, if you're a thoroughbreds. And we were laughing and stuff, and like we thought, yeah, that'll do. And so we went ahead with it, and it just grew really quickly. Now we had a couple of guys that worked with us then that had some other big groups, so there was
like one guys, like NRL sledging, so, I think,
yeah, that one,
yeah.
That was my boy Jai and Scotty Millwood and stuff, and they were like. And my admins are really cool, great guys, all fucking legends. So hopefully they watch this and they know that I've said that.
Shout out to those boys. You can't run a group without your admins, that's for sure.
Yeah, big shout out to them. Very funny guys, very, very good guys. Anyway, and we were just sort of like, we leveraged their groups a bit. So we were like, God, do you want to put a link up in this? Like, for, you know, if you like a punt, you like a yarn, and you want to share some tips or get some tips or just ask about shit, come in here. And so it grew really quickly, like really quickly. I think at the start we're getting like 5,000 new accounts a month. But like, again, it seems like a lifetime ago, even though it's like only a couple of years ago. Like we just said, like you've got to be 18 and over because it's gambling related content. And I think we lost that first group. So Facebook we woke up one day and it was like, bam, gone. And like, I'm sure that you would know, or if any of your audience don't know, if anyone doesn't know, Facebook doesn't have like a helpline or a live chat or like a phone number you can call. Like it's just all done by like leaving a ticket or like opening a ticket, which is like you report a problem and then you just have to hope that they get back to you. So the customers, like the service, and I know this will probably go out on Facebook and I might get fucking Zuck turn up on my doorstep with, yeah, with a knuckle sandwich for me.
This is going out to the metaverse.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, it was just hard and we lost that and I was like, okay, whatever.
And you would have had 10,000 or tens of thousands?
I think it was 15 at the start.
Yeah.
15,000. Yep. But
do you remember that? Because I was going to ask you about that there was a wave of pages and groups getting deleted by Facebook. We suffered it, same as you. That would have also been 2017, wouldn't it? Or 2018, around then. Yeah. And the reason I think it just happened was just like they just kind of would have their keywords that they just kind of decide to key in on, and just kind of bots can just sweep through and just remove everything. Because we got it as well. I remember just like a Sunday night, just trying to log into the Tripod Facebook page, and seeing a notification like your page has been unpublished. And the reason is, and it was like for publishing gambling content without permission, because it wasn't as if there was no gambling content on Facebook. Facebook still had Sportsbet with, you know, with a million people following that page or whatever, and still had sponsored posts and ads for bookies. It's like kind of like they're acting like all righteous or noble, like, oh yeah, you shouldn't be putting out gambling content. But the truth of the matter probably was that they didn't want anybody who could be benefiting in any way or making any money where they weren't getting a cut.
Yeah, 100%.
So whereas the bookies that advertise on Facebook are paying huge figures. If you even want to get that permission off Facebook, you're paying huge amounts of money for those sponsored posts that people see. But yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it was a kick in the guts to like have a page or a group you've grown, and it just disappears overnight. Now, yeah, and as you say, there's nobody you can appeal to or nobody you can talk to. It's just gone overnight. Yeah.
So that happened. I think we had like nuked it at 15,000, and then we did another one, and that got nuked even like really fast. And then we actually just left it for a while, and then we were like, no, we'll start another one. And that seemed to work, and that's where we're up to now. We've got like 93,700 members at right now. So yeah, that was a kick in the guts, but we just passed through that. And
you know what we did at one stage? We made several groups. They kept getting deleted, and then you'd have backup groups. And also, not only that, other challenges were that, like, you'd be an admin and your account would get a ban, a 7-day ban, a 28-day ban. So then, like, your page would get deleted and you couldn't even tell anybody. You couldn't, like, post on Facebook to say why. But so then other people were, like, working. That's actually kind of how we got some of our admins who, to this day, guys like Jeff and Dan, who a lot of the Tripod community know well, they reached out to us at that time. And actually, there's way more. There's 10 or 20 other guys who I can't name all of them right now, but like they contacted us privately and said, do you need help? And we had like proxies that were like posting the Tripod tips each week because we couldn't. But the funny thing I was going to tell you was we had an event called Pod Party. And it was an event that the date of the event just kept on getting prolonged into the future. And it basically served as the group, but it never got shut down by Facebook because it was an event, but everyone was just posting their tips in the event and stuff like that.
That's actually a pretty
funny idea that we tried and got away with. And then eventually Facebook just stopped clamping down on that stuff. So again, at some point we did say, well, let's just try another group. You get a bit disheartened when that many have been deleted. But we've had the group that we've had's probably been up since 2018, same as Punt Hub now.
Yeah.
But like for you guys to grow, you're approaching 100,000 members. It's the biggest in Australia. I think the name is catchy. The logo as well, obviously recognizable to a lot of young men. And that's catchy. And then I think that's cool, interesting for people who just like anyone out there who's trying to grow anything on Facebook, a page or Instagram, whatever, like that you did leverage connections that you had in other groups because that allowed you to reach more people. And then obviously there's also organic growth that once you get a few people in, then they're telling their mates because, hey, this is a bit of fun. They're adding that. And that really helps it grow as well.
You know, we wanted to be a place. I was thinking about it when we were growing stuff, because I was like, fuck, we've got to do something with this. Like, not just to cash in and make a quid. Like, I don't want to ever charge a punter anything, right? But I want to be the place who, like, if you go to, and I was thinking about when I went to my brother's Bucks weekend up at the Gold Coast years ago. On the Saturday, we went to the Gold Coast races. We were all fucking, we had eyeballs hanging out of our heads. Like, we hadn't got much sleep the night before. And we were sort of rocked up to the race. We tried to dress up. We probably all looked like shit. And, like, people were like, oh, you guys know racing. Like, have you guys done any form? I'm like, fuck no. We were up drinking to like 5 a.m. No, we haven't done any form. And then I was like, where can we get some tips at your fingertips, right? Like Daily Telegraph or something, I don't know what the Queensland one is up there that they've got, the Courier Mail. So the Courier Mail might have, you know, like the tips for Gold Coast races. And I thought, and I went back to that thinking about that. And I was like, it'd be sick if, you know, a good place to go would be, you know, if you could just go bang onto Punt Hub, search for hashtag Gold Coast and just see anyone that's like puts up a tip. Now, again, in theory, that sounds great. In reality, it doesn't work like that, right? Like there's not that many tips up there or people don't give a reasoning. They're just like, Gold Coast Race 4, number 6, get on, unload. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, I can just, that effectively, that's the same as me just closing my eyes, pressing my finger on the screen and seeing what I touch. Like, there's no reason, like, nothing. So that's kind of where we wanted to get to. Now, we've strayed off course quite a bit during, you know, I was in lockdown for 4 months in Sydney, and a lot of other people would have been as well. So the world's pretty crazy, but these are some things that we wanted to do. I don't know if there's any budding software developers out there that want to help us, but I was quoted minimum, like, a deposit of $100,000. So I was like, fuck, dude, I don't even have $10,000. Like, sorry, there's no way I can do that. You know what I mean?
For a website or an app?
For a form guide, to make a horse racing form guide.
On what platform, so though?
On the website.
Website,
that would be,
yeah.
That would be mobile responsive.
Yeah, not so, an app, but yeah.
Not an app.
Yeah.
But
so similar. Yeah.
But pure, like, so effectively, just go to punhub.com.au/form, and then that's the racing form guide, right? And just, we would pluck the eyeballs out of what.
And it's, yeah, too. it aggregates a lot of great content providers and then puts it all in one place. So depending on what meet or what race you're interested in, it's kind of all at your fingertips.
We were going to do it properly. So you have to buy, like, pay for the race fields or pay for all that data from, I think it's AAP, or there's a couple of services that do it, but that's about, this is a while ago. So it's probably gone up a lot now, but it was like $3,000 a month. And then to pay for the historical stuff for, like, so they're all their past results and stuff is another couple of thousand a month, I think. So,
yeah,
you know, it's, let's say it's $5,000 a month. That's $60,000 a year. To just for your feeds, and then it was $100,000 deposit to get this sort of looked at. So I was just like, you know, that's way beyond anything I can do with, you know, the budget that we have, which is, like I said, I don't even have 10, let alone 100. So, and that was a deposit. That wasn't like, that wasn't the cost that we'll, at the end of it, you'll have this. So, yeah, we've got plans on doing things like that. We wanted Punt Hub to be a place where, that's right, I didn't touch on this, the education. So I know you've done that really well with some of your podcasts and stuff when you talk about book percentages. And
yeah, and we've called it like Punting 101.
Which is what I think we've got a little section.
Oh, yeah, you were telling me that you had that idea of Punting 101, and I said, oh, are you familiar with like a catalogue of stuff that we've done? Yeah. And you hadn't really seen it, but like you've had the same idea that like there's a lot of people out there that are actually quite interested in punting and follow a lot of content and maybe don't always know terminology or know some of the theory, some of the basic theory or strategy or whatever behind certain aspects of punting. So you want to create like that information hub.
Correct. And one thing I don't like, which is weird, and I was perhaps pretty good at this at school, like I never really gave a fuck about asking a question, even if it was a dumb question. If I didn't know something, I wasn't shy. I'd be like, excuse me, sir, I don't get that. Like, what does that mean? And it didn't bother me, right? Because if people are like, oh, you idiot, I'm like, well, it only takes him 30 seconds, and now I do know, so now I'm no longer an idiot.
And the truth is half the class is probably wondering the same thing. They just don't want to put their hand up.
Yeah. So that never bothered me. Like, and it still doesn't. Like, I you know, so there's so many terminology and numbers and figures and things on the form guide. There's still heaps of shit that I didn't know. The reason I'm sort of bringing that up is that we've got on our website, Punting 101, we've got 9 articles that we sort of started and we dropped off. Look, the last article we wrote was probably a year ago or something. But, you know, that's something that we want to do. We want to be one thing I'll also say is that we don't want to compete with other groups. I think the more information that's out there is great. And that's why we're more than when I remember we put a thing up saying we're looking for some NRL guys. And you were like, hey, listen, I know we're kind of like competitors, but do you want us to post in you? And I was like, fucking oh, like, because I followed your NRL from the start, pretty much. I was like, these guys are very, very sharp. So we're not trying to compete, you know, like it is almost like between a few of us groups and stuff, it's kind of, we're trying to be just value added for the punter, right? We're not charging them. So it's free to come and go as you please. And you also got to remember, there's so many people out there that also don't have time to sit on Facebook and scroll through stuff. Like they'll just, some people like don't care that they don't know what if the you know, if a bookie's got 135% market up, they don't care that they could have the other book's 125%. They're just like, oh well, I've got an account here, so I'm just going to bet here anyway. But and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. That's who am I to tell them? Nah, you're an idiot. You shouldn't do it like that. You know, some people. Still, a lot of people don't understand scratchings and deductions, right?
I was about to say that. Because as group runners, how many posts do you get like per day or per week of people, hey, I haven't been paid outright on my multi or, you know, my single and stuff. And I want to get through like all the stuff that we do on a daily basis.
Someone will have a bet on Sportsbet, right? And we'll get paid out half the amount because it's a dead heat. And rather than going to Sportsbet or trying to find the answer themselves, they'll just come on the group and go, this is fucking bullshit. Look at this shit. I got rorted. This is horrendous. Like, fuck these bookies, fucking grubs, hashtag scam, you know, and post their bet slip. And I'm like, dude, like, take a breath. Go look up, just Google what happens in a dead heat in horse racing. What happens to my bet in dead heat in horse? You'll be able to find, like.
And like I actually have noticed Sportsbet's got a bit better with that where, you get random pop-ups on Sportsbet and it's like, there was a dead heat today, just so you know, that will be paid, you know, half win on each or there's been a protest. And it's like, and you actually know that they're feeding you that because their customer service are getting smashed by the same question 500 times.
But also the other thing that, like, look, it's fucking Facebook. It's not real life. Everyone's sort of on there and everyone's, people can be having bad days and good days and stuff. So I understand sometimes it's frustrating when you see someone write something that's just, you're like, oh man, he's serious. But you just have to scroll past. It's just, you don't, you know, like imagine walking down the street and walking past a cafe and you see, you overhear a guy going, mate, check this out. I got a fucking half of it. You wouldn't run up to the cafe and go, you fucking idiot. Like, don't you know how the fucking betting works? Like, there's no way you'd do that, right? But yet you can, people seem like they think they should be able to do that on the, and that's, I'm not going to get into that, although that's a thing that we're going to talk about. That's, I'm not going to get into what people should and shouldn't be doing on the internet. It's, that's what it is. And that's how it's developed. And like, there's, you know, Instagram and Facebook and all these social media platforms, Twitter and stuff are like trying to combat cyberbullying and stuff. And there's probably a long way to go. And, no matter how many times you say to people, just scroll on by, buddy. Someone might be having a shit day and they read something and that just ticks them off and they just go, you know what? You're a fucking idiot. And then it just unravels and then there's a Facebook.
Yeah, group. I mean, there's people out there that just like, whether they're bored or whatever, as you said, they're having a bad day, but they're picking fights and whatnot. And that actually feeds into like being a group admin. People may not appreciate how you are kind of like a school principal. It's like you're overseeing everything and then somebody's not happy and there's a disagreement and then this person said this to me and it offended me. And then if you don't come down hard enough on the person that upset somebody, then that person that got offended is angry at you. If you come down too hard on somebody, they say, oh, what a sook. You know, all I said was this and, you know, they're stupid. Yeah. And either way, you're the bad guy because no matter what, one of them's not going to be happy. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, people may not realize like how much of that goes on. And then somehow people actually hold like personal like grudges against you or I because we're an admin and we made a decision that involved clicking mute on somebody who was having a disagreement and got personal or whatever. That actually is a really interesting aspect of running a big group. But we'll roll through that because I had a few questions to ask. But also in the sense of like making it a hub of information, I thought something that you guys have done really well, which we've kind of imitated because you talk about kind of group rivalry actually. I definitely did see you guys as rivals and I think we all the big groups saw each other as rivals. Touching on another topic, which is affiliates, which we will also get to more in depth, but it's like I used to have this mentality that like each person that might sign up to a bookie with you is like money that your business can generate. You know, if for every sign up, we might make a kind of like a finder's fee or a commission. And if for every person that joins Punt Hub instead of Tripod, you might get that commission instead of me. So we're like direct competition where now.
Yeah.
I just don't really think about it like that. For one, I think affiliate earnings have really dried up. I think you talk about the Wild West and back when we started our groups like 4 or 5 years ago, you could advertise a lot more openly you could generate a lot more signups. And I'll candidly say, like, as a business, Tripod, we made more money. Well, the most money we ever made was in 2017. And we made nothing in 2015, nothing in 2016, didn't know what an affiliate was. Then there was kind of a gold rush of every bookie was trying to get market share. They were offering all massive offers and you were getting like a cost per acquisition on signups. And I did see like any other group. And if somebody jumped into our group and said, oh, join my group, you did see it as competition.
Yeah.
But well, yeah.
The thing about the self-promoters, you know, that's another point we've got. But like what pisses me off, well, it doesn't piss me off. I don't lose sleep over it. But like, unless you got permission, don't just think that Tripod is a place for them to advertise their
Punt Hub is a captive audience of 100,000 people that, if I post in there, I get a free billboard for my enterprise, which a lot of people do think. And then if you don't let them do that, then they think you're stopping me growing my business or you've got something in out for me. And then they'll go and slander you or take it personally against you. But the problem is we can go off track anyway because it's a casual conversation. Yeah, people, if we were to allow people to say, this is my business, this is my page, this is my Twitter, this is my Instagram, this is where I tip, this is my WhatsApp, I made 3,000 units last month, you know, join here, it's only this much PayPal, it would be an unbelievable amount of spam. Like it would be an unbelievable amount of self-promoters. And that's why and I think you and I have a similar philosophy on it, that we restrict it a lot. And like we do let other people know maybe where else they might be able to get more of their content if they are at least a group contributor, like someone who's genuinely in there and doing something, bringing something to the table that benefits members rather than people that come along just purely with you're obviously thinking they're going to benefit themselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I'm happy for them. If they want to contribute and start posting tips and go, hey, listen, I've got a Twitter that I put something up. Okay, mate, absolutely fine. You've been posting here for 4 or 5 weeks. You've given really good content. You've put your balls, you know, on the line and said, this is why I think this is going to win or blah, blah, blah. Some of your results aren't great. Some of them, you've had good weeks, bad weeks, like everyone. Chuck it up. That's fine. I don't mind that.
And people do think that anything that's posted in your group is endorsed by you. There are people that believe that.
There's a lot.
And therefore, because we both know, because we get the blowback if someone ever follows somebody outside. I've seen people follow stuff outside of the Tripod group and then come back to me to complain because, this guy was actually nowhere near what he said. Yeah. And it's like, you shouldn't have ever let that person post in your group kind of thing. So it always comes back on us. So it is, like a bit of a challenge for 100%. Sure. I appreciate that.
And like what you said about the people trying to push other businesses or services, like the answer is no, just because we're not a classifieds. We're not an advertising billboard. And it's funny, with these guys, there's been a few of them that have paid services, which, I mean, there are a few paid services out there that are legit and that are good and that provide awesome content and are transparent and they're honest. They have shit runs like everyone else does. They have fill-ups like everyone else does, right? Like you guys could easily charge and for your services, and it would be, you've got the data to back it up, everything's transparent. You go on shit hot runs, you also have weeks where you lose. That's just the nature of the business. So we aren't paid services. Sorry, we aren't anti-paid services. What we're anti is that I've worked in bookmakers. We've seen it all before. Like, these places that come out that think they tip well, that want to start charging people, which, again, you've got to start somewhere. That in itself would be fine if it was transparent, if they said, look, I've only just started, but I've been betting for 6 months and I think I've got an edge. I'm going to put these out to you guys. I want $20 a month for it. At least then the consumer is like, okay, this is a bit of a risk. I'm paying this kid $20 or whatever it is. It's a risk, but I'm prepared to take that risk. He's told me he's only new to it. I'm going to go on this journey with him. I'm going to just bet small stakes and blah, blah, blah. but they don't. They're all like, there's at least fucking 2,000 Australia's number one, you know, betting tipping service.
Yeah.
There's 2,000 number one tipping services in Australia. They all seem to be, right? And I mean, you'd know yourself that they come and go like, you know, like the seasons.
Or even like, you've kind of triggered a memory I have as well, but and I won't name any names of bookmaker or person or service, but like, we know that bookies profile customers, and we know that people who share tips, you know, are going to create a wave of a bunch of people all getting on the same market at once. The bookies are actually sophisticated enough to know that's a group of people that follows Tipster A.
Oh, shit.
Right?
Shit,
yes, and there's actually bookies out there that know, oh, these are all people following Tipster A, and Tipster A's tips are not profitable. And they know that, and they're almost like chuckling away that, like, here comes the wave. Obviously, Tipster A has just given out a tip on this sport or racing or whatever, and everyone's jumping on. And they know actually that the long run, these tips aren't even profitable. But I guess that's the thing about like small term sample size, and also just people promising things that are too good to be true. And I always think, how do people fall for it? Not that everything is a scam, but I do think people will believe what they want to believe. So if that someone's telling them, oh, you can make all this money following me, people want that to be true, so they will believe it. But going back to like running a group, my kind of stance on it is, somebody will contact me, maybe not even contact us, just try and post. But if they do contact you, they'll say, oh, I made 500 units on NBA last season. Like, you're dogging the boys if you don't let me share my page to the group. And my whole thing is always like, you know, you're welcome to come and demonstrate your knowledge to the group. Yes, and like 99% of the people, when they get that opportunity presented to them, they don't. Or they, like, if a small fraction say, okay, and then they join your group and they tip for like a week, but if it doesn't go well, they just stop tipping. Yeah, and like, that, hang on, but you made 500 units last NBA season. Wouldn't you be pretty confident in your method or whatever? Yeah. But so that's how I try and handle it, is like, we don't want to hear about what you've done in the past because it's completely unverified. And if I've got somebody coming into Tripod that says, oh, I'm up 500 units on NBA, like, before I joined the group, in a way, if they put that record in their posts, it's like what you said before. It's, people may feel that's endorsed by us because we're letting them post that and tell everybody.
So ridiculous.
And the thing is, nobody's ever going to tell you about a bad run that they had before they joined the group. So it's all well and good to say, oh, we've won our last seven in a row. And like, I know people think they have a right to tell everybody else, but if you'd lost your last four in a row, you wouldn't be telling everybody else as well.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What we say is, only refer to like results you've had in the group, because that is verified. Like, that's been published. And then, you know, if anyone's doing anything dodgy, and this would be something that would happen in your group too, where people delete losses and stuff because they're trying to paint a picture. And so we've kind of, like, you know, the one good thing about running a group is that it is what, like, there is a lot of work involved, but there is somewhat self-policed, because there are a lot of people out there that actually want to hold others accountable. So it's probably a blessing and a curse that you and I'm sure you get people messaging you, tipping you off that this person's done the wrong thing, like, all the time.
It's even, we've got our attitude used to be like, okay. It's funny, you get more sort of like strict as you get bigger, I guess, because you just don't have time and effort to put into it. But we used to be like, right, we would contact us and say, hey, mate, did you delete a tip? And they go, oh, yeah, I didn't know that was against the rules. And we're like, mate, that's a big no-no. Now it's just block, if they're gone. And it's funny, 9 out of 10 of them know, like, 9 out of 10 of them don't come back and go, hey, man, I've been deleted from Punhub. Why? They know. You know what I mean? Nine out of 10, you block, they're gone. See you later. And there's other groups out there.
Massive thanks once again to Mark. As I mentioned at the top, that was part one of two of our chat. So I hope you did enjoy that, because part two is going to be in next week's episode, talking about growing the group to what it is today, deciding which posts to allow, which not to, dealing with spammers. You guys know those Telegram comments that you always see popping up. Creating original content, like how we created No Morals in the past spring, all the time, costs, stress associated with running a big group, the abusive side of what you cop,
And also the second part of our chat is where we really do the deeper dive into monetization, affiliate links, other marketing revenue, explaining how it actually works. That's next week. Remember, this show is available video and audio platforms. I'm also deliberately not focusing on current events. So you can find this show whenever, or you can revisit this whenever you like. If you don't have an hour free on a Wednesday night, it doesn't matter. Just jump in to any of the conversations that you're interested in, other than the Wide World Bet of the Week, which I'll always include at the end of the show. That will be something that is current, usually a market that's up for a couple of days after the show's released. But again, I'll share my reasoning for that tip as well, always on social media, as well as I will at the end of this pod. And this week we're going to go NFL, not just because I love the sport, but it's Thanksgiving in America, which actually means three straight games Friday morning to midday Aussie time. My bet is simply the Dallas Cowboys to be the highest scoring team of the day. $3.50 odds, that is, and max stake $100 you can get on TopSport. If you need an account, the promo code is TRIPOD. Toppy does sponsor the show, as you should know. Now, you may also know, if you know the game, Dallas do have a couple of their best wide receivers out, potentially a running back injury. I think that's built into these juicy odds we're getting. I also think it's offset because they've got a really good backup running back and a really good wide receiver who just came back from injury, which offsets those other losses a bit, getting back an important offensive lineman too. And actually, Dallas has injuries on defense, which helps their cause, because I do see that game against the Raiders being the highest scoring game of the day. It's the game with the highest total of the day, and Dallas are the biggest favorites of the day. They're $1.30 to win. I think they will. First game of the day, Chicago-Detroit, two very substandard offenses. It's the lowest total of the game, and I think it should be tight. So I'm not predicting a really high output out of either of those sides. Then you go to Dallas. They're coming off the offense's worst performance of the season. And that was actually against a Kansas City defense that got some guys back, really stepped up, and in front of a hostile and super loud Kansas City crowd. Now Dallas comes back playing in their dome and playing in front of their home fans. And I really just think quarterback Prescott, he's had an amazing year. I think the play calling, there's going to be real determination to have a big day. Then we just got to survive the final match of the day, Buffalo-New Orleans. I look at Buffalo as being the biggest threat to this bet, but again, that's why it's paying $3.50. It's never going to be a lock, but in my opinion, the Saints have a better defense than the Raiders, and the Saints are at home while the Raiders are on the road, and it's a really important game for New Orleans. And you look at those two opponents, Buffalo and New Orleans, they both actually conceded 40-plus last week, which I think means they come in more focused on the defensive end, wanting improvement there and wanting to limit mistakes. So I think this bet gives us something fun to cheer on through the day. If you like the sound of that, it's under Gridiron Markets on Top Sport. Hope you guys have a great week. Good luck if you're playing that with me. I'm actually getting married this week, so wish me luck. Well, if you are looking at me, you can already tell I must be bloody lucky to find someone that will marry me. But I'll see you guys next week. Episode 3, Mark Porter Chat Part 2. Tristan will be back. Good luck on any of your punts. And Lego.